SciShow Tangents is brought to you by Factor. Humanity is, for better and worse, in its grind set era. And don't I freaking know it. We are side hustling. We are chopping wood and carrying water. We are waking up and smelling the coffee. We are both hunting and gathering. Going to the grocery store, is this a grind set friendly activity? Is cooking dinner conducive to this entrepreneurial lifestyle? Sometimes we simply don't.
Sarah's coming up with all this off the top of her head. So maybe.
Definitely Sarah wrote this.
Yes, you think of me and you think that's an entrepreneur for 30 under 30.
You do. Don't you pretend do. You don't.
I do grind. Grind. I do. I don't know how not to. Sometimes we. And in this personal attack, me, simply don't have time to prepare a quality meal for ourselves. And yet we need a quality meal to continue that grind.
And that is where Factor comes in. Factor's fresh, never frozen, chef-crafted, dietitian-approved meals are delivered straight to your door and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Choose from over 35 meal options each week, breakfast, lunch, and dinner, with delivery plans that match your lifestyle. Order as much as you need, pause, or reschedule deliveries anytime. And as I always say, the more you slack, the less you stack. So stack up a whole bunch of no prep, no mess, heat and eat meals with Factor.
Limits exist only in the mind, says the ad copy. I don't know if I agree with this. I think there's probably some limits, like the speed of light as a real one. But other limits exist. There are some limits that exist primarily in the mind. But Factor meals can exist in your refrigerator. If you head to factormeals.com/tangents50 and use the code tangents50, you get 50% off. That code is tangents50 at factormeals.com/tangents50. to get 50% off. That's both the code tangents50 and the end of the URL. Grind. Code tangents50 at factormeals.com/tangents50. Welcome to Dear Hank and John.
Or as I prefer to think of it, Dear John and Hank, I can't believe that my audio didn't record for the last hour, so you didn't get any of the magic that we made.
It's a podcast where two brothers answer your questions, give you devious advice, and bring you all the week's news from both Mars and AFC Wimbledon again.
Oh, you should have heard the first time. It was so good.
I bet it's going to be even better. This is the difference between us. I'm like, we're going to knock it out of the park now. We're all loose. We're gonna find ways to make those jokes, but faster and funnier. For Great. Example, John, did you know that the Scarecrow from The Wizard of Oz?
Yep.
You haven't heard this one before, have you?
I haven't. No, it's all new to
me. Was the first non-human to ever win an Oscar? Because the Academy Awards are, of course, coming up. John, did you know that?
I did not know that.
Yeah, he was really outstanding in his field. But then then he decided to not be anymore, and he got himself a brain, and now he's got a podcast where he does true crime.
He does true crime. He's like, it's all bird related. His obsession is with the crimes that birds commit against crops and scarecrows.
Yeah.
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 What's it called?
Maybe he's like a bird conspiracy theorist. Maybe he's that guy who doesn't think birds exist.
Birds aren't real.
On Instagram.
Trust me, I'm a scarecrow.
The Scarecrow from the Wizard of Oz.
I've seen him up close.
Yeah.
What would it be like to be a bird? Anyway,
let's
answer
some
questions.
What would it be like to be a scarecrow? No one knows. John, no. First, I have to ask you a question.
Oh, sure.
How are your Project for Awesome Perks going?
Oh, yeah. The Project for Awesome just happened. We raised over $3 million for charity. Thank you to everybody who donated. We're so grateful. And it was just an amazing, amazing weekend. I am still tired. I have not fully recovered. I think Hank is fully recovered, but he is younger than I am.
I was way, way more tired this year than...
Yeah.
It's definitely catching up to me. Like, it's not as easy as it used to be to stay up real late. We didn't have an episode last week. It's because we were sleeping the day that we normally record that.
Yep.
It was the Monday after the pre-foray. And I slept more than I have slept in years. I slept for like 11 hours straight. It was wild.
Wow. That probably would have done me well. I didn't sleep late. I got up and took Henry to school at 6:40 in the morning.
Oh,
and so maybe that's part of why I'm still tired. But My perks are going fine. They're going great. I am making all of these pieces of pottery that people bought, and I've made about 20 of the 60 that I have to make, mm-hmm. although some will no doubt blow up in the kiln when I fire them. And so I'll have to make more than 60. But yeah, it's going all right so far. How about you?
It's good. I made a huge miscalculation, but thankfully Catherine saved me. I thought I was going to make 800 of these anglerfish things on tiny canvases.
Mm-hmm.
And I probably could have pulled that off, but I did not realize that every single one of the tiny canvases would be, in order to protect the canvas, individually shrink-wrapped.
Oh, no.
So the process of, I've started making the anglerfish, but I have not unwrapped all of the canvases yet.
Right, like that so becomes half the work.
It's like involves a knife, so I have to be careful.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm like trying to like listen to a podcast or something, and my brain's just like flow state, but then like disconnected, and I can't. Oh my god, it's draining. But it is what it is. Doing the work. I'd rather be making the art, but instead I am unwrapping canvases,
which is part of making the art. Right? Like sure. Normalize process as part of creation.
Mm-hmm.
Normalize process. This first question comes from Lily, who writes, hi, 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 hi. Do mouse burp?
John, I'm glad that you asked this question a second time.
I read the question word for word.
That is
do
what
mouse
it says.
Burp. Do mouse
hi,
burp.
Hi, 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 do mouse burp.
Do mouse burp.
I looked this up, and Deboki and I both went all over the internet trying to find the answer to this question. There is misinformation about this, which is that if you feed mice like baking soda or just like Coca-Cola, that they will die because they can neither burp nor fart.
Mm.
So the gas just builds up inside of them.
You just fill
this
them up.
This is not true.
That's
they can definitely
true.
Fart. It doesn't make any sense that they wouldn't be able to fart. If you can get
poop like, out of there, you can get air
solids
out of there.
Out of your.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So, but maybe, and I couldn't quite get to the bottom of this. Maybe mice and rats can't puke.
Oh.
Which might also mean that they can't burp.
Oh.
If that's like a similar brain thing or a similar physiological thing that like mm-hmm. their mouth is a one-way hole.
Mm.
And
You couldn't find evidence either
it
way.
It seems to be a thing that we literally do not know about the world. Among the many things that we do not understand about mice, one of them is, and how would you even measure it? How would you tell?
Yeah.
Like maybe there's a really little
you'd
burp. Like how would you know?
You'd have to ask. And this
right.
is part of the problem, right? Like
you can't ask.
The hard thing. I mean, I'm more like a mouse, Hank, than I am like almost any other creature on Earth, right? Like over 90% of Earth
oh,
by
I
biomass
see.
Is yeah. plant or bacteria. I'm not uh-huh. very much like a fern. I'm not very much
sure.
like E. coli.
No.
Then
you're much more like a mouse.
Even after you get to all that stuff, right? Like almost all the almost all of life is not animals, and then almost all the animals are insects. You got to go so far down the line to mm-hmm. get to the differences between me and a mouse, even among living things. And
but
yet,
you can't even tell if they burp.
I have not only that, I don't have any idea what it's like to be a mouse. Is it pleasant? Is it desirable? Is it sometimes I think, well, I bet mice sort of live in a flow state, you know, where they're just doing mouse
right.
stuff. They're just thinking
uh-huh.
about food. They're thinking mm-hmm. about their family. They want to be warm. They're in, you know, they're just
they're doing the work.
Just
being mouse. Being mouse.
They're playing level 7 Tetris, right?
Yeah.
Where like you're good enough to not die for a really long time, and then you die, right? Like. And
or, but it might not be like that. They
might
be scared all the time. They might be constant. Like they look
total
a little
terror.
Bit scared all the time. I think I would be scared all the time.
Yeah.
If I was a mouse out in the world.
Oh God.
Surrounded by like foxes and raccoons and cold and.
Yeah.
Like, what do I eat? I don't know what to eat.
No. Dude, I'm in a closet right now and I'm still scanning my surroundings 4 times a second for threats. You know what I mean?
Yeah. You're not even a mouse.
And I'm like looking for mice. Right, like I'm scared that there's going to be a mouse in the closet. And so if you shrink, is it like that? Is it just like constant fear of other animals and trying to find food and feeling cold all the time and not enjoying the rain? Like, are they bothered by the rain? Like when they're outside and it's raining, are they like, oh God, I wish it would just stop raining? Or are they this is great. I like this.
This is life. This is everything levels. Is a different thing.
You never know what piece is going to be next on level 7 Tetris, but there's going to be another piece.
Yeah, I don't think they like the rain. I think they're sad little mice, but I don't know.
But you don't, I do. But what is sadness even to a mouse? I think it's like Camus. We must imagine, just like we must imagine Sisyphus is happy, we must imagine mice is happy.
I guess. I don't know that reference. This next question comes from Maggie, who asks, Dear Hank and John, I'm sure people will love
it. Sisyphus?
I'm sure. I know about Sisyphus, but Camus says he should be happy. He seems definitely not happy.
Okay.
It seems like a big, complicated philosophical thing.
You should read the essay. I'm not going to be able to summarize it.
Exactly. I didn't think you'd be able to. This next question comes from Maggie, who asks, Dear Hank and John, does skiing get better? Have you ever been skiing? This weekend I went for the first time with my boyfriend and some friends, and I'm a little terrified of skiing.
Yeah.
Going up small hills, very hard part. Going up small hills is the hardest and the worst.
Wait, like, you have to go up the hills?
Are you talking about like a tow line where you have to like hold onto the tow line? Because that is not good.
I'm just asking. How,
or are you talking about
know.
Getting on the ski lift, which is also, I don't like the ski lift.
I don't
lift.
Know how you go up the hill. Do you get
the
on
ski
the
ski lift?
I think the ski
lifts are scary.
Might be the most terrifying part of skiing. And that's saying something because every part
it's
is terrifying.
Quite scary. Yeah,
no. I mean, you put me on skis. I am what Hank imagines a mouse to be.
It's funny because when I got on a ski lift, my like only time I ever went skiing, I got on the ski lift and I was like, this looks very scary. And everybody was like, no, it's fine. You'll be fine. Nobody ever gets hurt on the ski lift.
Right.
And now I know that was a lie. People get hurt on the ski lift all the time.
Oh, yeah.
Specifically getting on and off, the part that I was most scared about. So I was right. But they were also right to try and calm me down about it because it doesn't necessarily help to be super freaked out. Anyway.
Yeah. I did a pretty intense hike recently.
Yeah.
And we had to scramble up a rock face that was quite steep. And as we were going up it, like I noticed that my friend Craig got pretty serious. He's generally a jovial outdoorsman, but he got quite focused. And he was like, you need to put your foot there. You need to put your foot here. And I was like, yeah, no, great. Thank you. And then we'd like make it up to a little landing and he'd be like, that was great. We're doing great. Don't look back. And I was like, all right, wait, is this... Are we in a stressful situation?
Am I in danger?
Yeah, like I was good till you said, don't look back. Don't look back at what? Like, and then I did look back and I was like, oh, I could die out here.
This is like that place where that guy got his arm stuck in that thing. Is that where we are right now?
I don't have the courage for that. We all know how my 127 hours ends. Anyway,
to
skiing.
Maggie says that Maggie's partner loves to ski and Maggie wants to try it out. How do I get better at this terrible sport?
Now, Hank and I are going to have very different answers for this because...
And we know this because we've done it before. I hadn't heard about the rock climb, though. That was new.
Yeah, no, I
you
thought I'd bring
what,
you something a little
you
fresh.
Never
you never
fresh
know what's
going to
emerge. So I've only been skiing once. I've been cross-country skiing a bunch of times, but I've only been downhill skiing once. And it was with my famous Uncle Baxter, Sarah's Uncle Baxter.
Uncle Baxter with the highball glasses.
A classic character in the green cinematic universe. And Uncle Baxter's strategy for teaching somebody how to ski is to put skis on their feet and then send them down a hill and kind of as you go instruct you in the ways of making a pizza slice.
Yeah, yeah.
And that worked. It worked okay for the first few minutes. But then I started to pick up speed and – I was cooking. This is a very minor hill. This is like a bunny slope, but when you have no way to slow down, you will continue to accelerate. And that's what happened to me until I hit a tree and the ski patrol had to come and they were like, how on earth did you manage to hit a tree on this hill that has a slope of less than one degree?
you know.
They were like,
I'm not in control.
Was it on purpose? And I was like, no, look at me. You know, like, do I look like somebody who knows how to ski? Of course I don't. Here's my strategy, Maggie. And Hank's going to tell you all about how, you know, you got to get up every
time
you fall down.
Don't tell him what I'm going to tell.
Yeah, yada, yada,
let me tell it.
Here's my strategy. And this is my, I learned this from my friend Linda. Her partner, Alex, loves to ski. And Linda's position is, I love that you love to ski. And I love being here at this ski lodge with you. And I will be here by the fire reading a book when you get back.
Right. Which is
fine.
And it's
just a nice relaxing time on vacation, which is a dream. Like to have a whole day to read a book. Beautiful.
Yeah. I think that that is lovely.
Or.
I will also say that I'm really grateful to former me for learning things and getting up when it was frustrating. So the first day is obviously always going to be the worst. And the trick is to find the point at which learning to ski becomes a little bit fun, because that learning to ski is a very different thing from skiing. Learning a new skill is a very different thing from practicing that skill. Now, you're always going to be getting better at skiing. There's no one who's sort of like, ah, I did it. I'm as good as I could possibly be, even, you know, elite slalom ski racers, I'm sure, think about how they could do better. But I had this experience. So this is weird, but I had this experience this morning. I was playing voice memos on my phone, like old voice memos. I was like, what are all of these? And one of them was Oren. And because he said something cute. So I started recording it. And I said, so how many babies are there? And he said, 20. I think there are 20 babies. And this was 2 years ago. And then I said, well, how many people do you think there are? Because like, there's more people than babies, but like, how many people are there? And he said, 15. And I was like, no, that's less than 20. So like, it's like, there's more than 20 babies. There's definitely more than 20 people. Mm. He said, no, 15 is bigger than 20.
Yeah.
And I was reminded of how much it does in a way. Yeah. It's just sort of like, feels 15. Like a bigger word. Yeah. 15. It's a lot more going on than 20.
Yeah. 20. That's how it should be done, Hank.
Just by the vibes.
By vibe. Well, yeah. But like, he's right. 15 is bigger than 20. And it should be that like when you get to a billion, it takes you a couple minutes to say it. And so we can't even talk about billionaires, right? Because we have to talk about a word that's much longer than billionaire, that's a little shameful. Like a little embarrassing.
Isn't it a little embarrassing how long it takes to say,
to describe
yourself?
Thing
that represents your net worth?
Yeah. Like, what do you do? Well, I'm a scoobidly doobidly flippity floppity happity hoppity.
And people are like, oh, right.
Oh, one of those. Yeah. God, so lame. Why don't you give some of your money away so you can just be a scoobidly doobidly hippity hoppity?
Be much easier. It was just remarkable And I think that I think I'm going to play it for him tonight because he's been struggling with this very thing where like, as we all do, where it's, you know, he's learning how to ice skate and there are days when he doesn't want to do it because he doesn't feel like he's getting better. He's way better now, but he like can't feel that. So, and right. I've said this before, the important thing is feeling the progress. And if you can feel the progress, it becomes much easier to continue to develop a skill. But also, it's about what you want to do. And I hope that everybody's like, being well supported, on the ski hill, but it's never fun to be the person who's worst at the thing, you know?
Just to get to Oren's point about the 15 or the 20, Hank's point is that when Oren was little, he thought that the biggest number in the world was 15. And now Oren can do all of the math.
Yeah, he can do a bunch of stuff, and he knows so many things, and it only took 2 years.
He probably knows how many babies were born this year. I wouldn't be at all surprised if he was like, 21 million, Dad.
He does occasionally know some weird thing that I'm like, how do you know that? He's like, oh, YouTube video? I'm like, oh my
right.
God.
Yeah.
It's cool.
Yeah. Henry said to me recently, how long do you think you could live in a supermarket, you know, like in a zombie apocalypse situation, eating only the food in the supermarket?
Interesting. That's a great question. And I bet there are some supermarkets in America that one person could live forever in, like their whole life.
Well, it turns out that there is a MatPat video on this very topic. And the conclusion is indeed, you're good. You can make this work.
You can probably do it.
With a little bit of composting, you'll be all right.
Right, because you could then grow some food, you're saying.
Yeah.
You would eventually, but you could, like, you got to pop those corn kernels off and start to make some corn.
Put some of those potatoes, cut them up, make some seed potatoes, like, and you'll probably be good.
Yeah.
Because also, like, the canned food is good for a long time.
Yeah, basically forever. But you would eventually start to have to make your own food. Interesting. Of course, there's a MatPat video about it.
Of course.
And I don't get that one. John, let's do a fresh one. One that we didn't do the first time. This one's from Amanda, who asks, Dear Hank and John, why does it feel too late to start a movie, but not too late for me to binge an equivalent amount of TV? Amanda, I will also add an equivalent amount of 15-second long videos.
Yeah.
I will watch 15-second videos for 2 hours right after saying, no, I can't watch that thing I very much want to watch because it's 2 hours long.
Mm-hmm.
What is wrong?
Oh, yeah. No, the movie business has a big problem, right?
Uh-huh. Which is that, and it's us.
And it's us. Which is that movies seem a little bit like work. In the way that books used to. Like, I loved reading books as a kid, but I also was conscious of the fact that they were a little bit of work, whereas watching a movie was a break from work.
Mm-hmm.
Like watching a movie was pure entertainment, and reading a book was, like, entertainment, but also with a slightly medicinal taste.
Yeah. Which is still how I feel. Like, I'd rather my son be reading a graphic novel than watching a YouTube video.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Right. And I think if we interrogated that deeply, there would be some reasons for it and some just biases, right?
Yeah.
But now, when I sit down to watch a movie, it doesn't feel that. It feels a little bit like that. It feels like, ugh, this is a big investment. It's probably going to take a few minutes to get going. There's probably going to be some, like, backstory I got to pay attention to that's going to pay off later. Chekhov's gun's going to show up in the first act just so that it can be shot in the third act. Like, there's going to be, I gotta focus in. Or I can watch TikToks. And they ask.
And, like, I'll be in it. And it can last exactly how long I want it to last.
Yeah. Well,
which is always more than I think.
Exactly. It will last much longer than I want it to last because I'm going to be so excited by it and so into it. And
Well, is it even that, or is it the promise of the new thing that you're not even watching yet? That's what I think it is.
Oh, you think it's about the next TikTok.
There's something two TikToks down that is actually the TikTok I want to see. I mean, what a wild way to recreate the idea of consuming video.
Yep.
And I know that I'm in it, thick in it. I'm like, I'm consume TikToks. I watch TikToks, but I do not feel good about it.
No.
All the time.
No.
Like, there are days when I'm like, this is so fun. But a lot of time I'm like, this is not, like, we do not know the experiment we're doing on ourselves right now.
There's so many experiments that are uncontrolled that we're doing on humanity right now, right? From ChatGPT to self-driving cars to TikTok to Twitter, we are in an era of corporations being freely able to experiment upon us.
But
I think it's really interesting and kind of freaky that we've made this fairly sudden transition where, like, even my kids still love watching movies, but if you give them the choice between an hour or an indeterminate period of time watching YouTube Shorts or watching a movie, they're usually going to watch YouTube Shorts.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And YouTube Shorts are free. They don't cost $200 million to make.
Yeah.
And
they basically make themselves.
Right. They sort of make themselves. And it's a little hard to make movies that way, you know, like, and so I don't know what to do about it. Like, I'm suitably freaked out. And I think most of the technology, most of the media companies out there are suitably freaked out. Like, I think that they're genuinely thinking, well, how do we release a movie like Turtles All the Way Down? And I don't know the answer to that. Like, I don't know. The movie's really, really good. But like, how do you release it? I don't know. It's the same. It has some of the same challenges that books had maybe 30, 40 years ago. And books figured it out.
Yeah.
Books are still figuring it out. You know, like, the size of the publishing industry hasn't really shrunk that much as a result of the TikTokification of human attention. So there's some hope there. But man, it is a weird phenomenon.
It's a weird moment to be in and to be a part of, I guess, as we all are.
This next question comes from Colson, who writes, "Dear John and Hank, I recently acquired a yo-yo, and ever since then, a question has been on my mind. Could I yo-yo while skydiving? I'm not planning on going skydiving anytime soon, but if I ever do, I feel like yo-yoing while plummeting toward the earth would be really cool. Just an average yo, Colson." Hank, can you John, yo-yo while skydiving?
I think you cannot yo down when you are skydive yo-yoing.
Certainly not.
Because it's just going to get blown back up. It's going to get blown back up to you faster than the string can pull it to you. It's almost like the problem isn't that the, like, you need the yo-yo to wind its way back up the string. And if it's being blown up at you, it won't wind. So it might be spinning, but it'll be coming up faster. So it won't be able to rewind.
That's not the only problem
you need to do.
But yeah,
I know. It's one of the problems. Yeah. But that means you definitely can't yo down because it's going to get blown right back at you. Unless you're really fast.
You have to turn yourself around away
turn
from
you're on your back.
The ground. Well, you're not.
Uh-huh.
You're not on anything. That's part of the problem. That's what's so terrifying
you know
about
what
skydiving.
I mean.
But you're
and
facing,
you throw it up.
You're facing away from the ground. You're looking up at that plane that you inexplicably just chose to leave.
Yeah.
And you are, then you yo-yo. And
then you yo.
I agree with you 100%, Hank, that you, in that situation, it should be possible for you to yo.
But you don't think you can yo.
Can you yo-yo? Can you
I don't know.
That
this
yo-yo
is the thing.
Back
I have no
to
idea.
Your hand.
So obviously, like, what's good? There's some potential energy in the rotation of the yo-yo that's going to pull itself back down the string against the force of the wind. Is that able to overcome the force of the wind? I have no idea. There's definitely a situation in which the wind is strong enough that that is not the case.
Right.
But have we reached it? There is only one way to find out. And right now, there is a person who is listening to this podcast.
I'm not sure there is. I'm not sure there is.
Who's both good at yo-yoing. Nope. I bet there's a lot of people who are good at yo-yoing.
Yeah, I believe
in that. Listenership.
That part of the Venn diagram circle is quite large.
And then there's people who are really good at yo-yoing.
I see that Venn diagram. Yep. People who are really good at skydiving.
And listen to this podcast and yo-yo. So there's one of you out there. There's one.
I'm not sure
there is. Probably. There's maybe like 0.75 of you, which means that there is a good chance that you exist.
Here's the thing.
And the next time you're skydiving, I need you to be good at skydiving and good at yo-yoing because nobody's going to get hurt because of this.
That's my concern. I actually am getting sweaty palms right now just thinking about—
People know what they're doing.
The possibility—
And if you're a person who knows—
You got to be really good at skydiving because I will not be able to live with myself if— You die trying to find out if you can yo-yo while skydiving.
Here's what's up. You are that person.
Okay.
If you are that person, you have queued up the podcast to this point in the podcast.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to say, now is the time that you jump out of the plane.
Oh, God.
Go. He's out of the plane.
Oh, God. I'm very nervous for you. Am I adding to your anxiety?
No, stop.
Okay.
Your yo-yo is already in your hand right now. Yo, and see what happens. Now do it on your back first and then do it on your front. See if you can do it front ways. Okay. Now rewind the yo-yo because that didn't work. Now you're falling out of a plane, rewinding a yo-yo. This is terrible. Hopefully you got the new yo-yo GoPro that's got a camera inside the yo-yo. It's called the YoPro. And then you do it. Try one more time and then try again.
Yep.
And now I'm going to need you to pull your parachute because that seemed like a long enough time to me. Maybe it wasn't. You know more than I do. Actually, don't follow any of my instructions with regards to how to skydive.
Exactly.
Just the yo-yoing part. Now, you're going to land sometime in the future, and I'm going to need you to ideally have had a GoPro strapped on your head during this so that you could send us the footage of you yo-yoing and whether or not it worked.
But also, it's okay if you just want to email us text-based, and you don't want to deal with the stress of the GoPro.
Also, I feel like most skydivers have a GoPro.
I'm so anxious right now. Just from you, like, talking through that, I don't want to be held responsible for anybody's skydiving, period. Hard stop. It's like asking
I told you the second one was going to be better, yeah, John. This is way better. This is way better than the first one.
I'm not going to pack the skydiver's backpack, and I'm not going to tell them how to jump out of a plane.
When to pull the string. No, I don't even know how it works.
All right. That all reminds me, though, that this podcast is brought to you by Hank's Yo-Yo Skydiving Instruction School. Hank's Yo-Yo Skydiving Instruction School. It's free.
and it's that's because that's the value we provide.
Exactly. You want to know why this podcast is free? Because it's not that good.
This podcast is also brought to you by Uncle Baxter.
Mm.
Uncle Baxter, responsible for John's worst ski day and his best cups.
And of course, today's podcast is brought to you by that sweet flow that mice hopefully get in, because it's either that or absolute terror all the time until their early death.
And also, this podcast is brought to you by the YoPro Yo-Yo GoPro. It's not particularly useful, but felt like it needed to make it anyway.
I feel like I'd get really nauseated watching
the footage.
Watching the footage from a Yo-Yo GoPro.
Seems right. Yeah.
This episode of Dear Hank and John is brought to you by Thrive Market. THRIVE is how that's spelled. You may or may not be like me. Here's a thing I know about myself. If I put it in my house, I'm going to eat it fast, in no time flat. And so I like to shop in a way that makes sure that the kinds of foods that are in my home are the kinds of food that should be in my body. You know what helps out with that is having a go-to grocery and household essentials thing that just like pops up on my phone, and it's like, hey, do you want to order your monthly thing? And I'm like, yeah. And then I pick the things that I want in my house, and I don't pick the things that I don't want in my house in the moments when I actually have self-control, which is not when I'm standing in front of the pantry. Thrive Market's super great, whether you're looking for organic kid snacks, low sugar alternatives, or gluten-free pantry essentials, which I absolutely am. And the pretzel bites with the peanut butter inside of them to make my wife so happy. She's like, I can finally have peanut butter pretzels again after developing a gluten allergy. It's fantastic. And as a Thrive Market member, you save money on every single grocery order. On average, you can save over 30% each time. They even have a little deals page that changes like every day, and you can go and see it and see like, maybe I want to try out some new fun thing. They got all kinds of brands on their website. They got Amy's, Banza, Burt's Bees. They got Mike's Hot Honey, Oatly, Olipop, Poppy, Salt. When you join Thrive Market, you are also helping a family in need with their one-for-one membership matching program. You join, they give. Join in on the savings with Thrive Market today and get 30% off your first order plus a free $60 gift. Go to thrivemarket.com/dearhank for 30% off your first order plus a $60 gift. That's Thrive Market, THRIVE market.com/dearhank. And they have told me to say it one final time, even though at this point it seems like a lot. thrivemarket.com/dearhank.
So we all know there are things in life that you have to compromise on, but one thing you don't want to compromise on is your health. When it comes to your health, there should be no compromising. So don't go back to that one doctor who uses your appointment to catch up on the latest headlines or their family group chat or the crossword puzzle just because they're available right now, or take your slightly sketchy insurance. Instead, check out ZocDoc, the place where you can find and book doctors who will make you feel comfortable, listen to you, and prioritize your health. You can search by location, availability, and insurance. So literally no compromises here, because with ZocDoc, you've got more options
than you know. ZocDoc is a free app and website where you can search and compare highly rated in-network doctors near you and instantly book appointments with them online. So go to ZocDoc.com/DearHank and download the ZocDoc app for free. Then find and book a top-rated doctor today. That's ZocDoc.com/DearHank. ZocDoc.com/DearHank.
All right, Hank, I want to ask this question from Jason, who writes, Dear John and Hank, is there a limit on how loud a sound can be within our atmosphere? Could you ever say, yes, this is the loudest a sound can be and nothing will ever be louder? Or is there just a limit on how loud we are able to perceive or measure noise? Dig the show, pursuing that brain gold, Jason.
So my initial thought was, it's energy and you can sort of like, you can put any amount of energy in and mm-hmm. there will be more and there's always more energy you could put in.
Mm-hmm.
But this is not actually the case. In fact, there is a maximum sound of any medium, a maximum volume of any medium.
Oh.
Because at some point, the amount of energy being transferred, because sound is a wave that passes through a medium like air or water or whatever.
Right.
At some point, there is a maximum volume, and that happens when the energy of that wave destroys the medium. And so there is a maximum volume.
It, like, destroys the atmosphere?
Yeah, it rips the air apart.
Oh, God.
And it becomes an explosion.
Oh, God. Really?
Yes. And in air, in our atmosphere, mm-hmm. It cannot get higher than 194 decibels. In water, it's 270 decibels because it holds itself together better, I guess. So,
and how loud is 194 decibels? That would hurt my ear, I bet.
Yeah, I think that that's enough that it would be a big problem.
Okay. So the loudest sound in history was the Krakatoa eruption.
Yeah. And so
that was the loudest sound ever experienced by human ears. It flattened approximately 80,000 trees and shattered windows that were dozens of miles away. That sounds like a bad party.
Right. And I think that, like, at the point of the creation of the sound, that wouldn't have been a sound.
Oh.
And so, like, there was a front at which the energy became a sound because it was no longer destroying the medium it was passing through.
Mm. Yikes.
So, like, there's just, like, what we're dealing with now is not, like, the, like, there's not a maximum amount of energy, but there is a definition of what a sound is,
mm-hmm.
and it's a wave being passed through a medium. And so, it's semantic, but so in a weird way, that wasn't the loudest sound because there have been other sounds that were the exact same volume, but it was the loudest sound in that, like, it could be heard from farther away because the point at which it turned into a sound was farther from the point of the eruption of the volcano, would be my guess.
Hmm.
Sort of how I'm understanding it.
All right. Well, I hope I never hear the loudest sound in the world.
No, I think your brain would appreciate, I think that your ears would also appreciate that.
Yeah. Jeez. All right. We got another question from Jamie Hank, who writes, Dear John and Hank, what have we learned today? Pumpkins and penguins, Jamie.
Oh, no. We learned that whatever John was doing the first time you recorded the podcast, you shouldn't do it that way in the future.
It was not good.
Do you have the waveform in front of you? Like, are you looking at it as we record?
Yeah, not usually, though. I'm usually looking at the document.
Mm.
But now I'm looking at the waveform.
Do you only have one monitor?
Yeah, I only have one monitor. What do you mean? I only have one computer. How many computers do you have?
Are you recording this on a laptop?
Yeah.
You're sitting at with a laptop on your lap right now?
I don't have a desktop computer because it's 2023.
Wow. Oh, man. I need all the monitors.
Do you? I don't like being surrounded by monitors.
The whole Project for Awesome on a laptop?
Yeah. That's why my video stream was such high quality.
All right.
Maybe
that's not
why.
How I do it. I watch the waveform the whole time because I've panicked that I'm going
to
lose it.
Well, now I probably will be too. Maybe I need to get like 16 monitors in this little closet, but that feels like it'd be very crowded.
Or you could just like have
here.
The document on one side and the waveform on the other.
I don't know how to do that, man. I'm a full screen guy. I'm looking at one thing or I'm looking at another thing. I don't want to be looking at two things.
I think you could figure out how to have a little bit of your monitor taken up by the numbers on GarageBand going up.
Hank, there's just a fundamental difference between us. And like, I am very sorry that I failed to record the entire podcast. But you got to understand, there's a fundamental difference between us, which is that you have a genuine deep desire in your heart to optimize. Things better, to create a stronger workflow, to do the work that results in faster work. And I have a strong desire to do things exactly the same way that I have always done them. I started making YouTube videos in 2007. In 2023, I still have all the hotkeys mapped to what they were in 2007. I have, every time I get Adobe Premiere, I have to tell Adobe Premiere, listen, I know you have all these ideas, but I need you to go back to 2006 iMovie HD.
Mm-hmm.
So, it's just different. We're just different people. And I go back and forth because sometimes I think, I should optimize. And then other times I think like, well, but the way I do it is pretty good, except for this particular week. This wasn't great, but it's still pretty good. I will say, if you'd lost all of the footage after we recorded an entire podcast, I would have been very mad at you. And your response was to say, oh, that's great. We'll be much better this time. So
trying to look on the bright side.
You're a great person. I gotta tell you the news from AFC Wimbledon because it's pretty stinking exciting.
Oh, good.
And it has nothing to do with the winning and losing because none of that's particularly good news. Rosianna, my longtime producing partner, Rosianna Hulse Rojas, and I have become sponsors, Hank, of AFC Wimbledon's first team women's team, who also play in the fourth tier of English soccer and are very close to the top of the table. In fact, they just beat 4-0, the only team above them in the table, hashtag United. Handing that team their first loss of the season and reigniting, I think it's safe to say, a nascent title race with 10 or 11 games left in the season. AFC Wimbledon's women's team has historically been really good, but also it's hard to it's like women's football is just really, really hard. And so Rosianna and I have decided to sponsor the team where on the back of the shorts for the remainder of this season, but next season will be on the back of the shirts. And we are choosing not to have like our names as the sponsor, but instead to have the AFC Wimbledon women's team sponsored by Partners in Health. It's the second team that Partners in Health is on the shirt of. They're also on the shirt of one of the best soccer teams in Peru that play in Lima. And this is really exciting. So I'm really excited to be sponsoring the women's team as well as the men's team and to have Rosianna participating in that with me. We've really enjoyed getting to know some of the team behind the scenes that are making it work. And really appreciate Wimbledon's longstanding support of the women's game and want to see it grow and grow. So, pretty exciting.
That's awesome. Congratulations.
Thanks. We've got a real chance at promotion this year, so we could be a third tier.
That's exciting.
Women's soccer team starting next season.
Yes.
As for the men's team, very unlikely that we will be a third tier English soccer team next year. There was some kind of vague hope for the playoffs. But then we went and lost to Gillingham or possibly Gillingham. Very frustrating result. We were 1-0 up. And, of course, there is nothing in this world more dangerous than a Wimbledon lead. We were also 2-0 up against Hartlepool last week, and we ended up tying that game. And then we ended up losing to Gillingham or possibly Gillingham. So now comfortably in 14th. The main thing that about Wimbledon season at this point is not getting relegated. That's not priority number one. We got to win 3 of our last 13 games to not get relegated. So let's just try to do that.
That seems doable. Just some of those have to be about against pretty bad teams, right?
Yeah. I mean, Gillingham or possibly Gillingham are pretty bad. But yes, yes. There's actually there's two teams this year that look really, really bad. And they may be the two that get relegated. But we've just ignited a new rivalry, a surprise rivalry with Hartlepool, because after they came from behind to score two goals, they were their official Twitter was very rude to us about the franchise currently plying its trade in Milton Keynes.
And oh, no.
There has since then been a significant uptick in Hartlepool hate, especially on my Twitter, my sports Twitter, where essentially every time Hartlepool, anything bad happens to them, I just remind them that they were going to be fine until they had to bring that up.
Well, this week in Mars news, we have bad news. So you might remember that the Zhurong rover, China's Mars rover, has been on Mars for about a year. And that from what we can tell, it hasn't been doing anything or being talked to for a while.
Right.
Well, the Mars Reconnaissance Orbiter released some images that showed that the rover has been not moving between September 7th and February 8th. So it looks like after it entered hibernation for like the Martian winter,
it did not wake back up,
which happens for a lot of different reasons. You got like solar panel problems. You got software problems. We haven't heard any updates from the China National Space Administration, but it was going to be originally a three-month-long mission. That was sort of the inside of the goal for the mission, and it did last a year, so that's a good accomplishment for it, but it looks like it is done.
Yeah, I mean, that's disappointing, you know, and it speaks to how hard it is.
It's hard
to create a rover that can wake up after going into hibernation during the Martian winter, right? Like, yeah. It's just a reminder of every time that we succeed, how improbable it is to be able to learn about the surface of a distant planet. It's hard work. I really admire the people who do it, and I'm sure it's just absolute heartbreak when that's the outcome.
They got there. They did some other thing.
Yeah, but still, you know, I'm sure that's also what they're telling themselves. It's a mix of like, well, you know, we accomplished a lot, and I wish we'd accomplished more, which is the feeling that most of us have most of the time, you know?
I guess.
This novel is good, but I wish it was better. And that's my main feeling.
Yeah, can't we just be satisfied? No, that's not on the table, I guess. John, thank you for making a podcast with me. Oh, even basically two of them.
Yeah.
If you'd like to send your questions to us, we are at hankandjohn@gmail.com. We can't make a podcast without questions, and we love them very much. So many cool and good things come into that inbox. We're about to go record our Patreon-only podcast, This Week in Stuff, where we talk about things that we liked this week. And you can get that at patreon.com/DearHankandJohn. This podcast is edited by Joseph Tunamedish. It's produced by Rosianna Hals-Rojas. Our communications coordinator is Brooke Shotwell. Our editorial assistant is Debuki Chakravarti. The music you're hearing now at the beginning of the podcast is by the great Gunnarola. And as they say in our hometown,
don't forget to be awesome.